Well, hey there. Welcome to The Real Podcast. We share the stories and insights of real people that challenge your mind and inspire you to grow. For more information and resources, check out our website at CochraneAlliance.com/real. So, let's get real.
All right, here we go. Welcome to episode 2 of The Real Podcast. You're serving as your host. I'm Jason Kaliba, and we're glad to have you with us today. This episode, I want to talk a little bit with a guest whose passion is for health. And I want to welcome into The Real Studio, Stan Ween. Stan, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Good to be here.
I was thinking a little bit, Stan, how far back you and I go. It's more than 10 years. Stan has been a fellow worker in the Christian Missionary Alliance basically my whole career. So we share some professional passions. But really, I think the place where Stan and I have connected the most is our interest in exercise. And I've biked halfway across BC with Stan in 2012 in a bit of a charity ride we were doing, where we spent 7 days getting from Calgary to Kelowna. And in addition to that, we've hoofed up Grouse Mountain together and a few other pursuits where Stan licks me. Some of Stan's exercise passion has morphed way beyond that into something that he's giving a good chunk of his life to, and we want to get at that. So again, Stan, welcome here today.
Thanks so much.
So I've given you like the Jason Kaliba interaction with Stan Ween. Tell us who you are, a little bit of your history, what you've been about in your professional life, and take us to today and something you call the Health Project.
Yeah, I mean, I can do that just really briefly, but if I look back at the last 30, 35 years of my life, I mean, it has been consumed entirely by leading teams, being in charge of organizations, whether it was Safeway or three different churches I worked at, just loving the idea of being a part of a team, leading a team, and most of my time has been given to those endeavors. Alongside of that, I also sort of developed a passion, as you were talking about, for sports, a lot of athletic pursuits personally, but probably more importantly, nutritionally. And then as I have studied and learned and grown in that, something happened in my heart a number of years ago where I just invested more time and learning and just really developing a sense of what would God have us do with our bodies, with our food, in a way that's reasonable. Because, I mean, there's a lot of unreasonable stuff out there. And that really came to a climax, or really a crossroads experience for me, where I had to go, how much of my time and how much of my energy do I want to put into what I'm calling the Health Project?
So tell us about that. Like, what was the catalyst for really driving into this as a passion? What did you notice in your life that you said, okay, something's going to happen here?
Well, we got to rewind back to April of 1997. I was a pastor at Beulah Alliance Church up in the Great White North, and I remember waking up one morning and just looking at myself in the mirror, which you shouldn't do for a long period of time. And I just said, you know, you can do better. You have let things slip significantly. I mean, I was probably 40 pounds heavier than I am today. And I want to be cautious when I talk about weight loss. Maybe we'll touch on that later.
Okay.
But I said, you know, you can do better. You're here to steward all that God's given you, whether it's your spiritual gifts or your leadership gifts or whatever it is that God has put in your heart. And I was squandering the physical gift that God has given us, both myself personally and the things around me. And that really was the catalyst. That day, I actually put on my runners and I ran to the end of my block and back, and it just wrecked me. And so ever since then, I've really been on about a 20 plus year journey of discovery of both physical limitations, and excitement in sport, but also I think a more robust theology of what would God have us do with our bodies. But that was really the moment I woke up to a new reality.
Okay, so maybe just I know not many people like talking about their athletic resume, but I know from our conversations that there's been some significant goals you've set physically that you've, so tell us about like a few of the highlights of some of those experiences. Like, give us a couple of the ones that stand out in your mind, and maybe a couple of the other markers in terms of, if you look back in your a few key moments in seeing progression in your health. So aside from like an event or a few markers, you're like, huh, something's changed. What would those be? So the events and a few markers that you track yourself.
Yeah, let me see if I can just do this concisely, because it's kind of a boring pedigree. you know, so that day when I woke up, started running, making a change, and again, not an advocate to make everybody a runner. I want to be really clear about that. My mission is actually just to help people embrace what God has given them. But that being said, right away, because I'm a fairly driven individual, I looked at, you know, what could I do for a race? And the worship pastor at Beulah, a good friend of mine, Randy Weber, while he was still alive, he really got me thinking about doing a 10K race. And so I did that summer. And then once I did that, I wanted to do a marathon. So I did approximately 4 years of just road running. So I did a number of marathons, qualified as a highlight, qualified and went to Boston, which is the marathon dream.
Yep.
And then from there I go, I want to try something different. And so I went into triathlon. And of course, triathlon goes from sprint distance to Olympic distance to half Ironman. And of course, for me, then it's like, oh, well, naturally I would just do the Ironman.
Sure.
So I did an Ironman, Ironman Canada 2004 and 2009. Absolutely loved it. It was fantastic. Love the mass start swim. It gives you a bit of a panic attack, but so much fun. I love the cycling through Richter Pass and all the good things. And, you know, in 2010, so this is about 14 years into this journey, I actually was swimming not that far from where we're recording right now at Ghost Lake. It was in the Calgary 70.3 half Ironman. Halfway through the swim, I go, I'm done with triathlon. And then I went to the mountains and I started doing trail running. And in trail running, there's a whole nother gateway to pain and suffering. And so we ended up doing, getting with people who had like-minded passion for the mountains. And it was just fantastic. You know, it's like training, but you're just actually going for a hike or just discovering really far away places, deep in the woods and remote. Absolutely love that. Bring your bear spray, have a good time. I mean, it was just so much fun. And so it ended up being like a 100-mile race. Is sort of the longest race I've ever done, which just means I'm stubborn and really persistent. But in that, I learned probably halfway through the Ironman experience that athletic pursuit, apart from nutrition, is really not going to get you very far. As a matter of fact, I've seen so many athletes, now I coach, help design programs or people along the way, and they go, how do I get that last 5%? And I'm looking at them going like, what you mean the last like 30% or 40%? Because there's so much more capacity just to feel well, recover quicker, all those things. And so I started exploring the nutrition side more recently than the physical side of just activity. But it's a good combination of both. And my last 20 years, it's been just a real joy just seeing how far you could push the limits. And I'm not saying that this is a pathway that is normal for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, for me, it was just about how far could this path take me? And I haven't explored the end of that yet. And, you know, I'm in my mid-50s and would love to see what else is out there for me, and will continue to pursue it. And if my physical frame won't hold up anymore, I'll find other ways to continue moving forward and progressing, again, because I'm just stewarding what God has given
me. Sure. Okay, so this has led to you establishing something kind, something you've called the Health Project. So give us what is the Health Project?
Well, in a sentence, I guess I would say the Health Project is helping you take control of your health.
Okay.
And as simple as that sounds, most people I meet feel like their health is out of control, or they know somebody who's suffering deeply with health issues. And the more I study it, the more I go, that is not how God designed us. And it just stirred in me this passion to help people find simple solutions without all the chaos and noise and confusion of culture that can help someone just move forward. And alongside of that, we know, Jason, there's just a real need to even steward the things outside of just our bodies, like the things that we're not going to save the earth, but maybe we can take steps to help do our part for caring for creation. Again, not because we're going to make everything green and save the earth, but because we love God.
Right. So I always like getting down to the definitions of words. So this could probably be a half an hour on its own, but if you were to, what does it mean to be healthy? What is health?
Well, you know, I think we look to God's word for that. It's like, how do we avoid one extreme that says it's all spiritual, you know, because I think that evangelicals, we like to just so go like, it's all about that day, our blessed hope, the day that we get to be in heaven. Being totally mindless of the fact that God's kingdom is here and now. At the other extreme, you have another idol that's been lifted up, and we honor this idol, we bow down to it, and it's about you know, big abs and biceps and just the whole aggrandizement of the body. And so I think somewhere in there, health resides in the middle, and it's a combination of, I would say, you know, being active, again, not being a runner or a cyclist like yourself, all those things, finding something that just gets you out and moving, and we can talk about that. Also eating well, the things that God has made, not the things that man has made, which has created untold amount of pain and suffering. And I think people just ignore it because it's so addictive and so tasty and all these good things. But again, we might deviate there sometime, but it's also about anxiety and depression and the mind and having a soul that wakes up and wants to honor and worship God, having the energy and having close-knit relationships. To me, I see all of these things come out of the same desire to be healthy.
Okay. So, you know that our tribe, the evangelical tribe, is going to say, okay, Stan, where in the Bible, there's a lot in the Bible about morals and honoring God and worshiping God and living a right life. Does the Bible really say anything about having a healthy body? And if so, what's it saying?
Well, you know, this is such an interesting topic because I would say the evangelical would look to Scripture and say, what is it silent on? And you'd probably go, well, probably on physical exercise and eating well. For thousands of years, it has been assumed that that is a given. Why would you write about something that is just normal? If you look at even just the walking that the disciples did with Jesus, going from Damascus to Jerusalem and all these things, they could knock off a 30-kilometer walk, and that was normal. They didn't have processed food dragging them down and creating cloud brain fog that we talk about today and all these different things. They just ate what was given to them, the natural things of the resources. But I mean, I'm drawn to a couple of quick scriptures. I mean, 1 Corinthians 6:19 talks about, you know, your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. Therefore, honor God with your body. I wonder how much reflection we would need to go, are we truly honoring God the way we're living our life? We live in a culture that says you can have whatever you want, whenever you want, however much you want. And I think that we have become what Proverbs talks about a lot is gluttony, that we just like to have anything that just seems to be comforting to us. We've lost the art, the spiritual art the discipline of self-denial. Mm. And I think that's a problem. Ephesians 5 has a really neat little verse tucked away when it's talking about, you know, husbands love your wives, wives love your husbands, just as Christ loved the church. I mean, we just love to do that one on a good wedding ceremony.
We did it here recently.
And it's beautiful. But it says, after all, do you not just treat your body the same way as Christ?
No one ever hated his own body, yeah.
Yeah, but he feeds and he cares for it. Mm. And I go, I don't think many of us are feeding and caring for it like Christ loved the church. Mm. And then but probably the biggest factor for me is, what did God originally design when he created humankind, created a garden and said, you know, this is the fruit. This is the earth that you will work. He designed us, and science would back this up, in a certain way that our bodies operate optimally. And I think that he gave us bodies that can naturally fight most diseases, naturally be healthy, vibrant, and whole. And, you know, I'm not here to talk about longevity of life. Like, the doctors can make you live long. I guess my question is can you live well? Mm-hmm. You know, it's more the joy that you have into your old age. And like 65 to 80 should be some of the best years of your life. You glean so much wisdom. You have so much you can invest in other people. We call it discipleship or mentoring or whatever you want to call it. Mm. And just when we're getting there, you know that the average adult in our country, by the age of 65, just to be clear, suffers from two chronic illnesses, on 50% on average. You cannot function well when you're laden with medication, not feeling well, getting up in the morning and it's painful. Mm-hmm. And I think that my call is, in a simple way, that we can do better.
Okay. So maybe let me jump off that. A hot word these days is being holistic. So what do you notice? Have you ever seen, as people make changes in their physical life, what impact does that have on their spiritual life, or vice versa? Do you see that in some of the people that you're working with, or even in your own life?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really good question, Jason, because I think that we like to compartmentalize our little topics, you know, like our spiritual life, and lift it up as like the most important thing. But again, like, the wine, Jesus, resides in us through his Holy Spirit. But in what? A wineskin. Well, if the wineskin is cracked and leaking and all kinds of issues and it can't hold the wine well, I really think that we have to stop this compartmentalizing things. I think the spiritual is vital, but it's not disconnected from your emotional wellness. Someone who suffers deeply with mental illness or depression, it is sometimes hard to engage reflecting in prayer in the Word of God. And some of these things are troubling. And I would add equally in there the physical. Again, like, we do not want to be Gnostic in our thinking, elevating the spiritual above the physical. But when we keep them in check and not going to extremes of one or the other, but the fact that they all work in convergence together for true health, because I think God designed us to have true health, which is really fellowship with him and fellowship with each other. And so I really think that we would do an awesome job by just at least taking some steps to go, you know what? What about the physical side of my health?
So, I know you're working with people, coaching people, developing relationships through the health project. Is there a story you can tell of kind of seeing someone change, not only reaching maybe some physical health goals, but how that impacts their broader life beyond just, oh, I feel better, or I look better, or I perform better at a competition?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, some of the people I've coached have experienced some things that were even unexpected for them. Like, you know, you take the simple being at risk for stroke or heart disease, or your cholesterol is really high. These are very practical things that so many people face. And when we started taking some of these steps to actually have, you know, one of my clients' cholesterol go from super high, you know, his bad cholesterol, to getting back in range, to where the doctor goes, like, this is remarkable. Like, you don't like to hear that from your doctor. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, they should expect it. Mm-hmm. They should go like, you know what, when you do the right things, you get a good result. Sometimes they go like, that's remarkable. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking, well, actually, it's not really that remarkable. That's the way God mm-hmm. made us. But you should see how excited he is about the steps he has taken very intentionally over months. And that has an impact on how he feels, the joy in his life. And like, we know our joy comes from God, but how many times do you feel like your joy is being taken away when you start looking at all the things around you in your life, your relationships, your health? And I think so many of the, especially as we get older, the elderly have a lot of chronic pain and a lot of things that I think they would find that remarkable that they could change those things in time. By just being intentional. I've had other people just, again, like, I don't want to talk about weight loss. Weight loss is always a result of doing some good things.
Okay.
I'm not about body types. I think that we come in all kinds of shapes and mm-hmm. sizes, and we need to honor that. But I think when we start doing some things that seem more towards whole food and being active, your body will find its most comfortable and natural self. And that's what I see in the workshops that I do or the clients that I've coached. And it's just really a lot of fun seeing people. Like, I don't actually do much. I just help them identify and then hold them accountable. Like, that's not a very hard thing to do. They're the ones who have to take action and take steps. Just like I still have to make choices, and I'm always learning as well. And so those are some of the fun things that I get to see on a regular basis. Mm.
Well, let's maybe talk then practical. So if someone is an average person who kind of their menu comes as they feel like it, there's not a whole lot of intentionality. Give us the first couple steps. Where does someone begin saying, I'd like to be healthier, for whatever their motivation would be? Where do you start?
There's probably a few different places you could start. Number one is you don't start shooting for perfection. You look at what a person is currently doing, and then you go, where do you want to change? So, Jason, if I turned that back on you and said, what would you identify as one habit that you know is kind of nagging away at you, but mm-hmm. you don't really kind of take it under control and take that step of health? What would that one thing be? And I think that I would start by helping you identify, and we can do that through, I got some assessment questions, and those things kind of get at sort of some of the root causes of why we go to food for emotional security and different things. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole world of information there. But also, you know, one of the things that you could do is just track what you currently do, your activity and what you eat over the given week. And I mean, I can guarantee that I would find something that we could talk about, but it really is up to you to choose what would be one or maybe two things to do, because here's where I'm really opposed to diets. I mean, you give me the door, you push this door open, and I will speak quite strongly about this.
Okay.
Because I think diets create a false notion that we're doing better and then we can return to what we're doing. And it creates an up and down, an emotional roller coaster. And pretty soon we just give up. Mm-hmm. And what we are talking about is in the health project is the idea of going from discipline, which is hard, to habits, which are easy. Now, for example, like, I mean, if I said, okay, Jason, starting tomorrow morning, you're going to do such and such.
Okay, so let's put an example on the table. I know for me, if you were to say, what's the habit that's nagging me? I'd be like, well, I just like my sugar hit. So and if it's the nagging thing for me, I don't just like to have a black coffee in the morning. I like my coffee with sugar and cream. I like to have a dessert probably after lunch and supper most times. By mid-afternoon, I want a hit, and it's usually a hit of some kind of sugar. So, school me, Stan. What would we do? And I know that I can, you know, try to be. But how would I move from the hard thing of discipline to the easy thing of habit? What would that look like for me?
Well, I would say pick one of those things.
Okay,
let's just start with your coffee. If that's to say you chose it, not me, that I'm going to eliminate the cream and the sugar, and I'm just going to have my coffee black. And I would say discipline isn't changed to a habit in 3 weeks.
Okay.
That's where a lot of people go wrong. It takes at least, and I'm going to say at least 60 days to create a habit. And you would know this is true. Try this tonight, Jason. I want you to, what hand are you?
I'm right-handed.
Right-handed. So you're going to go home. You're going to brush your teeth with your right hand. Why? Because it's the way you've always done it.
Right.
I want you to do it with your left hand tonight. And you're going to stab yourself. It's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be very uncomfortable. If you do that for 3 weeks, you'll get better at it, but it won't be a habit. If you did it for 9 weeks or 63 days, it would be absolutely a habit, and it would be just as easy as with your right hand. And that's what we want to do with the habit of, let's just see, going back to your example, coffee. You just go, I'm going to do this, and you assess as you go. Again, so I would say number one is you choose your habit and pick a start date. Then you travel 3 weeks, and I think it's critical that you actually have somebody who walks this journey with you.
Okay.
Who have you told that you're actually going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's just like, nobody knows, nobody cares. Right. I can just revert right. back. Mm-hmm. You take it in three times, three-week increments is what I would recommend. And then link it to something else that you already do. So, for example, like if your coffee happens in the morning, what you could do is you could put the coffee cup out maybe the first few weeks, and you're getting ready for, you're doing this the night before. Put it out. I'm just making this up as
sure,
I go,
sure.
But you just put your coffee mug out there. You know you're going to make your coffee because it's just a given. It's part of your life. And then you put the sugar bowl and the maybe an empty creamer right there, and you just put some, like put a cake dome over it or something like that. Just a reminder that, no, we're not going there. So if you link it to something else that you already do, like with your breakfast, or I would say the first thing you should do is not have coffee. You should have a big glass of water and then move to your coffee. That's what I do. I would say that you'll begin to go, you'll be mentally thinking about it, processing it, and then once it's linked to something you already do, the habit will become easier over time, or the discipline will become easier over time, and eventually it'll become a habit.
Okay.
But you have to decide, is this the thing that you want to do?
So, like, okay, so that's because I'm kind of an all or nothing guy. So it'd be like, okay, I got to get healthy. I got to change that coffee thing. I got to nix all my desserts. I need to get on exercise 5 times a week at 45 minutes each.
Yeah.
And it goes good. It goes good for a while.
Yeah. And it goes good for a while.
Yeah.
So I would rather see somebody go super slow for the rest of their life, develop a new habit. Because I used to have cream and sugar in my coffee, loved it. I love my coffee black now. I actually buy good coffee so I can actually enjoy the coffee notes. I'm a coffee snob. And so, you know, there are ways to make it actually quite tasty. As you delete sugar in your life, your taste buds will actually change. You'll actually experience probably the ability to taste things more than you did in the past. But if you tackle all the things like you said, like all or nothing, yeah, you'll do it for 30 days. And then you'll quit. And I go, who's the person who's further ahead? The person who keeps moving intentionally one step at a time, or the person who starts, stops, starts, stops? And I would say, I don't really care where you are in 3 months. What I care about is where you are as a lifestyle change. That's what we're after. We're after permanent lifestyle transformation. And so if you choose coffee black, then maybe the next thing you would look at, maybe there's another area. Maybe it would be snacking after dinner.
Right.
Or desserts specifically, or the afternoon sugar hit. The reason we call it a sugar hit is because we know that it's incredibly addictive, and it creates a sugar spike. So that if you're just tired of being awake when you have your coffee, and then you get your drowsies that hit you when you're looking at your computer screen, and all of a sudden you're nodding off, and then you take another hit, it very much is an addictive property, and you can beat that cycle. I have, okay, so just to keep it in perspective, I don't eat perfectly. I think that one of the healthiest things we could do is to avoid perfection.
Hmm.
But having said that, I have energy when I get up because I sleep well. I have energy all morning long. I have a great lunch. I do not have a lull in the afternoon. And I have energy into the evening. And I prepare myself to go to bed and sleep properly so that I can start the cycle all over again. And a lot of it sounds like discipline, but I tell you, I also love to eat. I love to have fun. I love to go out with family and friends and enjoy a nice beverage and all these good things. But again, our culture has a skewed view of what moderation is. And so my encouragement to you would be start small and grow and keep growing. That's why I think part of the things that we do at the Health Project is you keep track. You have a log and you actually itemize the things that you're working on, and you travel with somebody alongside of you so that it's an accountability relationship.
You said something, avoid perfection. Take us back there. Why do you say that?
Because we talked about, you asked the question earlier, what does it mean to be healthy? Mm. One of the things that creates more unhealth in our life is anxiety. And when we strive for perfection, we're going to be shooting for that and so anxious for that last 5 or 10%, we are going to all of a sudden become unhealthy in our relationship with food. And that's what we're trying to stop.
Hmm. Hmm. Interesting. So if someone is thinking, we just picked a random thing from my life, but from the clients and people that you're working with, if you were to choose... if someone's looking, what will be likely the first choices that I'm going to make? From your observation, what are likely when someone's just getting rolling? What are some of the most common places to start?
Well, I think you look at your routines and you go, where can I have flexibility and where can I lock it in? And I think one of the things I would start any person on is you always start your day with 500 milliliters or a really big glass of water. Some cultures will want that warm. Some like it cold. I don't care. Mm. The reason we do that is it gets our metabolism just rocking for the day. It hydrates us. It helps remove toxins from our body. It gets us off on the right foot. And we don't need to eat when we get up. As a matter of fact, I'm not even a big fan of breakfast as the most important meal of the day. Mm. Everybody's got different patterns. So I would say start with water. I am what would be the opposite of an advocate? I'm anti-advocate of anything resembling soda. There are 10 to 12 teaspoons of sugar in a can of soda. They add so much acid in there so that you can actually absorb it. Otherwise, it's so sweet you would just vomit it up. It's so unhealthy. I grew up on Coke, Coca-Cola. And, there is life after soda. And the spike that happens and the harm that it does our body, I would say that is, no pun intended, low-hanging fruit. And I would say go after getting rid of the soda. Probably another area I'd start encouraging people on is we don't have to have meat 3 times a day. We don't have to become meatless. Again, going back to the diets, I am not a fan of Weight Watchers. I'm not a fan of keto. I'm not here to make friends either. I'm not a fan of the keto diet or paleo or vegan or vegetarian or pescatarian or flexitarian. There's so many different options out there. They only serve to confuse or create sort of an elite or ideology around them that I think they all can produce good results. They all can. Mm. I look at what is the long-term benefit of the choices that we're making. But I would start with some of the very simple things, the basic things. And I guess I'm going to back up a little bit here, Jason. I think there's 2 principles that anybody could apply that even without talking to me ever.
Mm.
And that is, let us move from being idle or sedentary to being active. And let's move from processed food to whole.
Okay.
If you don't remember anything else from what I'm saying, remember that. Because you'll start making choices that go, oh, I don't need fruit roll-ups because that's just full of sugar. I'm actually going to have an apple. I don't need orange juice because I think orange juice creates a bit of a sugar spike. Have an orange. these kind of trade-offs can start to happen, and you'll build momentum, and actually just don't treat it as, again, just a physical endeavor. To me, I look at the physical side as, I call it the spiritual discipline of health. And I think when we add it into how I pray, how I approach the Word of God, and even how I approach my body that God designed and said, Jason, you steward the body, the gift that I've given you. Mm-hmm. You steward what I've made. I'm going like, that is not a burden. That is a joy. And when we start looking at that, we start going, our culture is lying to us. We're absolutely being deceived by our culture that we can just get away with all these choices that go even far beyond just food choices, but just living a life that really is hedonistic in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you gave us some starting examples for nutrition in particular. If you were moving from sedentary to active, what would be the two or three things that you would say are good starting places in that transition?
Here's how I do it. Now, if you're going to go like, well, don't tell us about a running program.
Mr. Ironman, tell us.
But if one of your listeners does want to talk about the marathon, I would be very happy to talk about that. I would say look at your routines. What I do is, so after I have my large glass of water, I'm just telling you what I do, the day in the life. I go to my favorite chair and I open up the Word of God. By this time, my coffee's made, but I've made a commitment because I've linked my exercise. You know how I said link your habit to something you already do?
Sure.
I take my first sip of coffee, and right there, I go, this is what I'm going to do today. Because sometimes I only have 15 minutes. Sometimes I have an hour. Sometimes I can work out at lunch, or it'll have to wait till the evening. But you know your day usually when you're in your day. That's why I think sometimes programs can be kind of lock us in, and then we go like, I can't get that activity
that
done
today.
And then we skip it, and then we start skipping it for days on end, and pretty soon it's a couple weeks. I go, better to start with just even walking for 15 minutes or parking at the far end of the mall and walking through. Don't take the escalator. All those little things that, you know, we hear about, we already know the right things to do. Just start doing them. Just be more active. I think that part of activity is even like, you know, getting in a half an hour of gardening. You don't have to break your back and do it all in 6 hours one day in May. But what you could do is you could spread it out and do a little bit of gardening. So I like walking. Just even you can treat, you know, your indoor chores as a bit of an exercise or activity as well. Just kind of get into it and make it happen. So these are very simple things. Obviously, you want to progress and become a bit more active. So I try to find simple routines that I can do in 5 minutes, like 5 minutes of stretching or 5 minutes of I got a 5 minute leg routine that if I showed it to you, you go like, yeah, it's challenging, but it's fairly straightforward. The thing is, you can get up from even at your work desk when you're sedentary and sitting there for 8 hours, set your timer every hour, and then just get up and just walk down the hallway, walk back, and do 2 or 3 minutes of just quick stretches and maybe a little routine. And you are going to be so far ahead. Some people worry about their productivity, but you're going to be so far ahead just being active, even in your work day. And so you can incorporate it wherever you are. But I just think little things, like even just, I'm going to walk to the grocery store. I'm going to walk here. Ask yourself why you have to drive everywhere.
Sure.
Like all these little things.
Okay. So you hinted at this in a little earlier, but you're a big advocate of taking steps towards greater health in the community or with other people, not just making it, look, I'm making a deal with my diary. Or why do you advocate doing this with others?
Well, I mean, God created us for community, number one. But I think that if I don't tell somebody, you know, here's something I want to work on in my life, again, extend this beyond just, you know, food and activity level. Push it into all the areas of your life. Like if you're struggling with a certain area and you talk to somebody about it and they're your friend or your spouse, they can walk with you in this journey. Either joining you, which would be ideal, two people working on the ideas or the absolute ideals of the health project, doing it together builds a sense of team, and we're doing this together. And I can then ask you, hey, Jason, how's that coffee thing going? Or if you choose desserts, how's that going? I'm kind of losing. Well, what can I do to help you with that? And get into some specifics. I think when we do that, we put far too much confidence in our own ability to do the right thing and make the right choices. And that's why, I mean, God designed us to walk, you know, Ecclesiastes, you know, a cord of three strands is not easily broken. Like when we walk together, we get a better return for the work that we do when we work alongside other people. So I just say, and it's, you know, we're born for community. So,
okay, so that makes sense. Why might someone go a step beyond that and say, okay, I'm not just going to have a community of friends around that are doing this together, but I want to have a professional friend like Stan. So why step that up in getting someone who might consult with me? What would be the benefit of bringing you into the picture?
Yeah. Well, to be clear, I mean, a lot of people can, just like I did, make these steps without me. Some people need a little bit more guidance, or just like they're really frustrated, or they just need to know where do I think would be the best place that they would want to start. Because you could start anywhere, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best place to start. There's another scenario, too, that takes a little bit more coaching and understanding. If you're pretty healthy, like reasonably healthy, like I'm looking at you, Jason, you're going like, yeah, you're probably pretty healthy. You probably do a few things. I know you cycle. I know you care about this stuff. Otherwise, you'd never have invited me to come here and talk to you.
Well, if we got into the details, Stan, I know there's things that are not in alignment, for sure.
Well, we'll cover that offline.
Yeah.
but there are some who have, they're at serious risk for stroke. They have maybe some form of cancer, heart disease, or getting some news or discouraged. Maybe one of their kids are sick and it makes them wake up and think about things differently. Maybe their parents are aging and really ill. And so sometimes just doing the habit one at a time, that's the straightforward method of making change happen. But sometimes people need to kind of go, I need to do something a bit more major, and I need somebody to walk this journey with me intentionally. And so when they actually hire me, for example, or anybody who can really help in that journey, you will get exactly what you put into it. And,
okay.
So I think that there is a place for it. I just think, generally speaking, I think when we stop and think, like I'm hoping that you know, as a listener would do today, is stop and say, you know, what is God saying to me about my physical health, and what am I going to do about it? I think those are critical questions that if you start to ponder them, you'll come up with even two or three things that you could quickly do. But there are times where someone needs a lot more attention, or, you know, the person that they would turn to, maybe their spouse, isn't as supportive as they would hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want an advocate, somebody who's in your corner. Like one of the girls that I am coaching like today, we just came through the Easter season, and, you know, she was struggling to strive for perfection, and the Easter cream eggs came out, and it just was just this daunting
anxiety.
It was anxiety.
The cream egg. I've kind of moved past cream to mini eggs, man.
Well, I think actually now that you say that, it probably was the mini eggs, because if you can have three, you can have 300.
That's right. And you don't notice them going down.
Yeah, because they're
You have to unwrap the cream eggs. It takes more calories to unwrap
It's so
them.
Frustrating. Well, then you could just count that as your activity for the day.
That's right.
Those actually, by the way, are scientifically designed. They spend billions of dollars. The food industry, spends billions of dollars creating the perfect concoctions of salty, sweet, crunchy, melty, so that it creates a brain response. That's why we're addicted to a lot of this stuff. Mm. Anyways, she was walking this journey. She said, I want to get sweets entirely out of my life. She hired me. We were doing great. And I said, okay, so how's it going? Well, it's really, really a challenge right now because we're coming up to Easter. And, you know, I go, well, why don't you give yourself a little bit of a break? And then we talked about how do we actually control this moderation during a season. And that's what a lot of people don't have, is someone who can actually help them go, give yourself a little bit of a break here and make your choices carefully. But if you have, you know, 20 of them, don't have 200, but don't deny yourself during this Easter season.
Just a bit of enjoyment.
And then just enjoy it. I mean, a lot of the things I eat are just enjoyable. So a rule of thumb I usually use for someone who's getting healthy is the typical Canadian would likely get 60%, get this, 60% of their calories from processed food every day. Mm. If you can move that to 80% whole, 20% processed, well, hey, you can call it flatbread, but I mean, it's still pizza and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say that you don't ever have pizza. I mean, some of these things are really, really fun and create a sense of, you know, usually it's with people that right. you enjoy having good food with or going out. Again, like if you have a number of areas dialed in, you don't have to shoot for perfection, but it depends on what your goals are. If you're fighting cancer and you go to 100% whole food, plant-based diet, I can almost assure you that your doctor will notice the changes and will actually support you in that journey.
Mm, okay. Stan, tell us, you got the mic. I've been driving the questions. What do you got going these days? What do you want to tell people about that we haven't touched on already?
You know, I think that, I mean, you've given me the opportunity to talk about really what's on my heart. I really think my message isn't just for anybody. I really think it's for the Christian. It's for the evangelical church to go, let's not think about the health industry. It's a $1 trillion industry, and it's riddled with confusion. It's like my heart response to all the things that I've been saying is to go, let's talk to people who actually love God, because we should get it more than anyone. And I think that that's what I'm going to spend sort of my next few years investing my time and energy into. So basically the things that I am currently doing is I do workshops kind of custom to whomever would like me to come in, whether it's an organization or a church, and do just a workshop just to educate and equip. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, along all the lines that we've talked about. And then a little bit of coaching, but I love writing as well. Also moving into the church environment, working with staff. I think that, so I'm going to a church next week to work specifically with the staff team, and really looking forward to that because, again, like leaders have influence on other people. Mm-hmm. And I go, that's a place that I would like to spend a lot of my time. And, you know, for me, it's like I'm not going to be the world's greatest marketer, but I do think that when one life changes, they'll tell somebody. And I just think that I'll just let God open the doors and just see where it takes me.
Cool. Well, if anyone would be interested in learning more about the Health Project, Stan, or what he does, or how you might be able to benefit from what he's doing these days, check out our website, CochraneAlliance.com/real, and we'll have a link to Stan's website and all the information you might need to get going with what you're doing, if that might be interesting. Stan, thanks for coming to Cochrane today and hanging out with us. And I find you inspiring, and it's neat to see how something that's passionate and been kind of a side gig becoming your main gig now. I hope that God gives you lots of fruit on that with people who are healthier and honoring God more with their entire selves.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. I mean, really good to be able to talk about it, and good luck with taking sugar out of your coffee.
Okay, well, we'll get on the accountability as soon as we're done here. All right, I think that will wrap it up. Thanks for coming, Stan, and that about does it for episode 2.
Thanks for listening to The Real Podcast. For more information on this episode and others, check out our website at CochraneAlliance.com/real. Until next time, keep it real.